Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arola, very lucky to be joined on a big old day with some important updates, two important stories by Viviana Vigil. Joins us once again. Viviana, how's it going?
Hey, John. Hey, Dragon Squad. Good to see you guys. I'm doing great. I'm feeling good.
That's what I'm hearing. Hopefully we'll hear more about it. Great to have you here. I also hear that you have a pup staying with you right now.
I do. My sister's dog, Snowflake. You let me know when you want me to go grab her. She's always sleeping. So
I'm hoping that maybe as we launch into our first social break.
All right.
So for those of you watching live on Twitch and YouTube, you've got a treat coming up. For those of you on the podcast, apologies. In our defense, were we to do it live on the show, you wouldn't see the dog either way. It's a podcast. That's how they work. But anyway, thank you for listening and or watching. We do have a lot that we're going to be talking about. We're going to be debating, are Trump fans in a cult, or in fact, are you? Maybe we're going to twist things around on you. You might be in one. You wouldn't even know, but we're going to figure it out together. We've got a government regulation hearing getting heated. They really should have regulated the hearing, it turns out, because things got pretty messy in there. And then we also are going to be comparing. So Biden and Bernie Sanders, two different plans, but related, to make college more affordable. Well, the Republicans have finally come out with their plan, and maybe it's just as good. Maybe it's even better or not. Stay tuned to find out. We're going to be figuring that one out together too. And that's all in the first hour. We got fun in the aftermath as well. We've got an absolutely deranged pastor. We've got more fake fury. This time the wokeness is coming from your cereal bowl, and a Twitch streamer gets stalked. It's scary stuff, but we're going to be discussing it. In advance of all that, please hit the like button, share the stream so the people know we're live. They can join in on the conversation. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, you should definitely get those in so we'll be able to respond in our first social break. But with all that said, Viviana, are you ready to do this thing?
Now I am. Go ahead.
Okay, good. Okay. I wanted to give you as much time as you need. It's been a little bit.
Now I'm ready.
I want to make sure that you're ready. Okay, in that case, let's start with something fun. In a very real sense, Donald Trump did this to himself. And I don't even mean that he could have not stolen the classified documents, or after stealing them, he could have just given them back necessarily. All that is true. All of that makes this a massive legal own goal for Trump. But no, I mean something beyond that, because even ignoring all of that, he had some potential get out of jail free cards, and I use that almost literally in this case, potentially, that he chose not to use. And the reason he chose not to use it is because his brain is fundamentally broken by his own exaggerated sense of his own intelligence and entitlement, his need to feel like the big guy and the alpha male, and his complete lack of ability to tell who he should trust and who he should not. So buckle up, because we're going to talk about one way that he might have been able to avoid this whole thing. And that happened back in the fall of 2022. So we're talking post raid. We've already got the documents have been recovered by the FBI, and the legal process has begun. So the former president's team, he was told by one of his new attorneys at that point, could try to arrange a settlement with the Justice Department. Now, the lawyer in question here is Christopher Keese, who's actually still a figure in the Trump legal team, is one of the few that's made it through to this point. He was actually around during the arraignment. So he wanted to quietly approach the DOJ to see if he could negotiate a settlement that would preclude charges, hoping that Attorney General Merrick Garland and the department would want an exit ramp to avoid prosecuting a former president, let alone prosecuting someone who will at very soon be a candidate for president. Keese would hopefully, quote, take the temperature down, he told others, by promising a professional approach and the return of all the documents. But as you probably already well know, Trump was not interested in either of those things, being professional or giving back my documents. He didn't want to do that stuff. So Trump wasn't interested in listening to Keese or other lawyers who also, so he didn't listen to them. Instead, he listened to some who were urging a more pugilistic approach. As a result of that, Keese never approached the prosecutors, this is according to three different people. Now, it's pretty easy to figure out why some were telling him he should put up his dukes and fight. It's because it's very easy to convince him to do that. And if you want to stay in his inner circle, tell him what he wants to believe. That's what these bubbles are all about. It backfired though, because within a couple of months, we had a special counsel Jack Smith, if that's his real name. And now, of course, Trump has been arrested and we're off into the legal process. But there's actually more details that I think make it pretty amazing. I want to just flesh it out a little bit. So this was, according to sources, one of many opportunities where friends, advisors, and employees all tried to save Donald Trump from himself. Seven advisors with knowledge of the probe indicate that he misled his own advisors, seeming to believe they're not on his side, so he's just gonna lie to them. He told them that boxes at that point contained only newspaper clippings and clothes. This is after he had returned some, but not all of them. He repeatedly refused to give the documents back, even when some of his longest serving advisors warned him of his legal peril and flew to Mar-a-Lago specifically just to beg him to return the documents. So then he returns some of them. He goes to his advisors, he lies to them. He tells them, I sent them all back in so that they will put out like a press release saying that this thing is done. He made liars of them when they're just trying to save him from jail. He makes them out as liars. Later, facing a subpoena, he worked quietly with an aide, as you now know, Walt Nauta, to move boxes without telling his own lawyers, meaning that when they then went to the court and attested all the documents being returned, they were branded as liars too. So he's not listening to them and he's utterly legally screwing them over time after time after time. One person said it was a totally unforced error. We didn't have to be here. There's a layer of this that I think makes it even funnier, but I want to give you a chance, Viviana, to jump in. This is the first that we've spoken since, you know, we found out about the charges and all that. What do you make of the situation we're in as well as how we got there?
I'm fully shocked because if we go back months, you and I spoke about whether or not there'd be charges filed, and I did not think that there would be any charges filed. And I think it's exactly the reason he was charged is exactly what you just said. I knew they were gonna give him chances to fix it. I knew they were gonna give him chances to be like, oh, I just accidentally put 50,000 boxes in my bathroom. And he didn't jump at the chance because of that toxic masculinity or extreme narcissism. I'm not a therapist, but he definitely likes to be right. And he thinks that he's above the law. Now, anyone who's ever had any dealings with Trump for 30 plus years knows that this is how he is. This is how he does business. He lies, he corrals you into the lie, he gets you in trouble. So anybody who decides to be one of his cronies right now just knows that they're not really gonna have a very long shelf life because he's gonna use them as cannon fodder. And that's exactly what he's done. It's comical, it's sad, it's embarrassing for our country. It's like no other country has really commented on it because it's kind of like a Saturday cartoon comic strip or something. It's a joke and it's scary. Really, what is in these boxes and how dangerous is that for our country's security at this point? Yeah. You know, you have the GOP so worried about national security. Here we have nuke information, all kinds of classified secret stuff that now was just sitting on the, sorry.
Yeah, that was a colloquial term, but anyway. So, you know, I'm glad, by the way, that you mentioned that we really I hadn't noticed it. We haven't really heard anything from anybody about this, right?
I'm not saying that they haven't. Everyone's mum's a word.
Yeah, like, you know, even like Putin's not talking about it. Duterte's not talking about it. Bolsonaro's not tweeting him something nice. That is weird. One would think that a former president being charged with crimes would elicit some reaction. And I'm sure, by the way, that it has amongst many of them, but they're not being public with it.
They're talking for sure. And they might have the information. I mean, they're obviously just kind of playing their cards close to their chest to see who the GOP nominee is. If it is Trump, they don't want to come out and blast him now. So everyone's kind of just trying to play the game, which is, sad. Going back, we'll talk about it when we talk about cults.
Yeah, 100%. We're getting there. We're getting there. So, why did Trump decide to fight rather than comply? If Christopher Keyes comes to him and tells him, I think that we should go do some sort of deal, you know? It's pretty late in the process. We've defied the grand jury subpoena for a long time, but I think that if we go and we say we're gonna be professional, we're gonna do a comprehensive investigation. In fact, maybe you can bring some agents to search, not like a raid, you're not busting down the door, it's all private, but you can look and we'll give back all the documents. That almost certainly would have saved him. Not necessarily, but we know Merrick Garland. We know how gun shy he is. We know how much Joe Biden wants to avoid, you know, the image of this being a partisan thing. So I think there's a good chance they would have taken that exit ramp, but they didn't. So you might think, considering the risk here, the stakes being, you know, rotting in prison for the rest of his life, like literally 3 or 4 years in prison, then he would probably want to listen, but he didn't. So you might think he must have been persuaded by a true legal mastermind, someone with a lot of experience in the system, maybe someone who's gotten people off for similar sorts of charges. No. He did have lawyers, by the way, but he had someone else. Who did he have? Tom Fitton. Now, if you are not terminally online, there's no reason why you would know who this is. But if you've spent more time than you probably should have on Twitter over the last decade, you've probably come across him. He is the head of the conservative group Judicial Watch. A range of others also like were with him in encouraging Trump. But according to Tom Fitton, he was the guy. Tom Fitton, by the way, still around. Last year, he's telling Trump to fight. This week, he's having filet mignon, he says, with Trump. Which, by the way, you know that you eat fancy meals all the time when you're recounting a story that just happened and you feel the need to say the fancy meat that you ate. It's definitely something you're used to when you have to point that out in a story. But anyway, so that is Tom Fitton, head of the conservative group Judicial Watch. Here's the thing about that. Many people hear Judicial Watch and they think, oh, it's like something about judges, something about SCOTUS, and it is. You know, they file a bunch of like BS lawsuits or whatever, but they're in that area. That doesn't mean he's a lawyer, because he's not. He got a bachelor's degree in English from George Washington University. There's nothing wrong with any of that, but it's not a law degree. And the thing about that that I think is great isn't just that Trump is like flipping the bird to a bunch of people who are desperately trying to keep him out of jail with their actual legal degrees and their courtroom experience and going with this guy who, you know, studied Shakespeare or whatever. I don't know. I like it. Maybe, I don't know. He studied Hemingway. It's that Tom Fitton has been the head of Judicial Watch since 1998. Long time, long tenure. That's decades. So the issue isn't that Tom Fitton, who wants his entire career to be about challenges to the legal system, expertise in the legal system. The issue isn't that in 1998 he didn't have a law degree. It's that in the decades since then, he didn't decide to get one. Like, it's a 3-year thing. It's not easy or anything, but you could have fit it in. Hell, you could have gotten it during the pandemic. Everyone was at home. Put aside your sourdough starter and finally get a legal degree to lend some authenticity and expertise to your chosen career. But he didn't do that, and maybe he didn't need to. Why would you, when right-wing presidents still take your legal opinion over actual lawyers? What do you think, Viviana?
I mean, I wouldn't take too much stock in the fact that Trump, you know, gives you his ear. He was taking advice from, you know, the Lindell pillow guy. So this is a step up, you know. At least this guy is sort of involved in something legal related. I mean, you're totally right though. Why not just get your degree? I mean, you're totally involved with the law and rulings and you're reading about stuff all the time. You probably could just take the bar. I mean, Kim Kardashian passed it during that time. You could have done it too. I don't see why he didn't. Anyway, I'm not surprised that Trump is just finding people that are telling him yes. There's this old movie from like the 1930s and the tagline is pay the $2. This guy spits in the street. The cop's gonna give him a fine and he's about to pay it. And this guy, you don't pay that. He listens to this guy, he ends up on death row. He should have just paid the $2. And that's Trump's situation here. Pay the $2. People were gonna give you an out, but you wanna act like you're above everything and you're gonna get into a lot more trouble. I mean, it's kind of good for us because he's digging his own grave, you know?
100%. Yeah, by the way, I want to give some credit to Big Bull Dragon. So pointed out a part of this. So Tom Fitton actually shows up in a related sort of issue to all of this. So every once in a while, Donald Trump, amongst many other random things that he will say in his defense, is he will say there's two things that supposedly mean that he shouldn't get any trouble. So one of them is the Presidential Records Act. We did a breakdown yesterday on the show. It's up on the YouTube channel of how that is not remotely true. The other is the Clinton Sachs case. So what is that? Well, to just follow Trump, you wouldn't know because man on the right, they just reference stuff and they provide no context. They expect that You've been watching Tucker Carlson 24 hours a day for 7 years, so you know all this stuff. But what it is it's a case that Tom Fitton was involved in. Not as a lawyer, because again, he's not a lawyer. But the Judicial Watch was, they started it. So the basic idea was that supposedly that Clinton had some tape in his sock drawer, and they were saying that he wasn't supposed to have that tape. He was found to have, Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton obviously had no standing, they found that. But also that there was no legal mechanism to make Clinton give up the tape. It wasn't an official document, it wasn't a national security secret, it wasn't any of this stuff. And it, by the way, of course, has nothing to do with the legal trouble that Trump finds himself in, but he thinks that it does. They lost that. That was years ago, they lost that. But coming out of that, Trump thinks, no, they're winners. It fell apart, it blew up in their face. But I'm still gonna go with that guy. Absolutely insane. That doesn't mean, though, that there isn't any good news potentially for Donald Trump, and bad news for those of us who want justice, and justice not just in this particular case with the classified documents. Let's take a look at this.
In all likelihood, I believe that my case, as well as DA Bragg and the Georgia case, will unfortunately have to be adjourned pending the outcome of the federal case. So it all depends upon the scheduling of this particular case. I know there's going to be a flood, a flurry of motions, motions to dismiss, discovery issues, all of that. So it really all depends. Obviously, all of us want to know what this judge, Judge Cannon, is going to do, and whether or not she's going to delay this particular case.
Are you concerned about that?
I think everyone is concerned about that. So obviously, it will depend upon the scheduling.
So look, those were kind of offhand comments from Letitia James. So we don't know for sure that that's the way it's going to play out. She's sort of speculating there, but that is very consequential stuff that she's dropping. So the idea that now that Jack Smith has brought forward this case against Donald Trump, he's now been charged. So that's it for the other stuff? Like not small stuff, by the way. She didn't mention the E. Jean Carroll stuff. I guess that's civil, maybe that can go forward. But the investigation of the Trump Organization, the hush money payments, Fulton County, that they would have to pause all of that because of the classified documents. I'm not a lawyer. I share that with Tom Fitton. Why exactly would those have to some of them aren't even about the same topic. Now, I understand if you have like a state investigation of the classified documents and a federal investigation of the classified documents, having those run concurrently once you get to the trial period probably is not the best idea. But the hush money payments, tax fraud, pressuring the Secretary of State of Georgia, none of those have anything directly to do with classified documents. So I'm not saying that she's wrong, she's the expert in this case. But Viviana, this seems wild to me.
Yeah, it's, if I had to choose which one took precedence, I would take the federal indictment, obviously, than those other serious charges. But it might have something to do with scheduling, it might have something to do with witnesses and sort of like crossing in some ways, maybe there's some connective tissue. Like you said, I'm not an attorney either. I don't know what the rules are in regards to having these concurrent trials, but I just hope at the end of the day, he does have to pay the $2 and he does have to kind of
to reference on, the movie thing,
yeah. To go watch it, it's cute. We need answers as a country, and it's, I'm sure that there's a lot of former presidents have classified documents in their possession still, but are they just strewn about so recklessly? It's just really such a disrespect. We saw the disrespect in the Oval Office and the White House, just in when he was in office, the fact that he didn't concede. I mean, this is just right along those lines. And so I think as a country, we need to sort of have some sort of closure, and this, I think, will do it. I still think that he may not be held to the fire, but I'm hopeful. I'm surprised that these were charges were ever brought. And at this point, now we know why. They were like, are you sure you want us to do this? I'm not gonna listen. All right, well, here we go.
Yeah, look, I felt back in the day, much like you. I don't think our predictions were necessarily all that much about charges, although if you'd made me bet, I would have probably bet against charges. More so jail time. Which still very, there's a lot of reasons why that may not happen. And this development, if it's true, and I see some people in the chat saying that some people have responded that are in charge of some of these investigations to say that that's not the case. I'm looking, I'm not seeing direct evidence of that, but I'm assuming that they will put out statements as a result of New York's Attorney General putting out hers. It doesn't hurt him. You know, some of these charges, by the way, were they to be resumed later, he even worried to become president again. The state level stuff, he can't simply make it disappear like he can with the federal stuff. But the longer this gets dragged out, this particular one with the classified documents, he does potentially have quite a bit of power to stop this from going forward, were he to become president again. And we cannot write out the possibility of that happening. Now, with that said, let's have a fun little debate, but we're gonna start off with this.
I was with the Trump motorcade yesterday, and I would say that the people at Versailles at the Cuban restaurant, I wouldn't call them cult members, would you?
No, you know, the definition of a cult is a group of people who are excessively supporting one another and a cause, all about conformity and compliance and intolerance of anyone who doesn't agree with what their mission is. Okay, that's the definition of what the left is engaged in right now. Speaking of cults, all about conformity and compliance, and heaven forbid you don't agree with them.
So generally, if you're gonna try to make the case that something doesn't apply, you don't then willingly define it in a way that makes it definitely seem like it applies. That, I don't even know if that's the best definition of a cult, but if that is your definition of a cult, then yeah, the MAGA people definitely fit under it. They're not the only ones. Can you make the case that there are some people on the left that fit under this? Sure, for movements, maybe in some cases for people. Is it broadly applicable? No. The sheer volume of left on left fighting politically should probably be an indication that dissent is allowed. But for the MAGA people, the idea that conformity and being way too zealous about a person, being completely unable to see their flaws, being conned by them to hand over money that you're ill-equipped to give up, not accepting the reality of a situation, believing that they can never fail, being willing to put your body, your life on the line to defend the great leader, that is very much stuff that is true of the MAGA movement. Viviana, what do you think?
I think where we really delve into some cult-like behavior is the fact that the MAGA movement is also really getting intertwined with religious extremism, and their ideologies are really becoming, you know, married quite severely, and we're seeing it all over the country, these movements that are marrying politics and religion. So we're really seeing it more solidified as a cult now. Like you said, on the left are there. I would argue that how involved you are in politics, whether it's the DNC or the GOP, it is rather cult-like. This two-party system, and you're over there wheeling and dealing in DC, you gotta toe the party line. And I think that's dangerous on any side of politics. And so, you know, here on this program, for instance, sure, do we share a lot of the same ideologies? Yeah, but I've also come over here and blasted Nancy Pelosi many times. I'm not a fan of hers and never made it a secret. Nobody's here is gonna say, get her off the show whenever. You guys are encouraging discussion. You know, we wanna question things. And I think that's not allowed in MAGA. It's either you know, are wearing the red hat or you're not. And
yeah,
you know, I mean, any political extremist is gonna fall into those cult-like ideologies. So it's not immune to the left, but it's definitely happening on the right.
Yeah, yeah, just to clarify, I'm not a big fan of Nancy Pelosi. Some people are gonna be like, wait a second, does John love Nancy Pelosi?
No, I'm not saying you are. But she's on the left, supposedly.
Well, so, according arguably. To Republicans, she's on the left, not according to the left. She's
arguably.
The
left. Anyway.
But if you are on the left, get used to people telling you what side you're on, who you like, and what you support. You're not allowed to choose for yourself, unfortunately. Yes. So, look, in terms of the way that she defined the cult, like, I think that it's accurate. And I don't just mean that, like, they're intolerant of the left, even their definition of the left. I want to be very clear. I don't think that that necessarily means that you're a part of a cult. Plenty of Democrats don't like Republicans. I mean that the MAGA people are incredibly like intolerant of people on their side that diverge mildly from orthodoxy. Yeah. And people who have spent years building up what one would think is a bank of like cred that you could rely on if we disagree on something. Ron DeSantis dared to run against Donald Trump, and for many Republicans, that's it. They're done with him. He has only spent the last couple of years trying to own the libs, and spreading nonsensical conspiracy theories about vaccines and all that. He buys the wall stuff. He hates the, he's doing all the MAGA stuff, but he turned against the great leader, so he must die. Anyone who turns against the great leader, even slightly, is completely burned. That is utter intolerance. And now there's generalized intolerance too. Like, you know, what does the term Bud Light make you think of these days? Or Dylan Mulvaney and, you know, all that. We know how intolerant they are of people who, you know, go against their orthodoxy. But I'm saying it's even inside of their own movement. And again, they're not the only movement like that, but it is obviously the biggest one. Biden has fans. Biden has deranged fans and deranged influencer supporters. But I don't think Biden has a cult of personality like Donald Trump. I don't think Hillary Clinton, who I think was more popular in some ways than Biden, I don't think that Hillary Clinton had a cult of personality like that.
I think the difference is the cult on those sides is really the DNC. That's what people are feverishly following. Whereas in MAGA, it is Trump. And we can see it evidently with this lack of conceding for the election. I mean, you could tell them today, years later, Biden's been in office for 4 years. And they're still saying he didn't win. So that is the kind of mindset where the lack of rational thought stops. That's when you start to drink the Kool-Aid, so to speak. That's such an ugly analogy. Really poor.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, necessarily a fan. But also, and you reference this with the sort of like the gradual infusion of religion, which definitely is true for organized religion, but also for unorganized sort of new age conspiratorial religion.
Yeah.
Like the development of QAnon and that mythology, which has just now become part of MAGA. Like the MAGA people believe that everyone on the other side are pedophiles. They're all trying to eat your kid's brain and stuff. They all believe that insane stuff. They all believe that Donald Trump is here on a divine mission, that the storm is coming and follow the plan. Like you don't have to make the case that the QAnon thing is a cult thing. That's how it's organized. That's what it's for. That's why it's succeeded. So anyway, Sarah Palin made a great point there, just not necessarily the one that she intended to. With that said, we're gonna take our first break, but when we come back, we gotta jump into some of the fights that were going on over the last day inside of the halls of Congress. We've got that for you and more after this.
Don't ever compare Snowflake to Camila.
Okay, I will not. Anyway, it was more of a, oh my God, what's the name of that show?
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey, there you go. Okay, with that said, let's turn to something with at least as much drama as Downton Abbey, starting with this.
Going back to WOTUS and the Sackett family, who this Clean Water Act decision impacted, the family was threatened with fines of $10,000 per day, had their property misclassified as a wetland, and were prevented from building their family home. It may not be a $2.5 million home like yours, but that sounds like a lot of red tape to me.
Excuse me, I really take that as a personal assumption.
Do you disagree?
My home.
Do you disagree that this was an overreach?
I disagree that you're casting aspersions on
me or my- Mr. Chairman, I yield, thank you.
The lady's time has expired.
Yeah, so that was obviously gross. So it was gross and ill-informed. So pretty classically Lauren Boebert at that point. Also a little dash of cowardice at the end. She does her little like mean girl thing of, I'm going to say some things. I'm gonna throw a vicious, unfair insult, I guess, at you, or at least it's attempted to be an insult. And then when you have an issue with it, I'm gonna claim that the issue you have is one of the factual claims rather than the insult. Like, come on, like do you have even like a third of a lobe in your head? We all understand what's going on. Man, she thinks that she's smarter than everyone else in that room. She also thinks that she's far more clever, witty, and fast thinking than everyone else in the room. She got a lesson in how you're supposed to do it though, with a response from Representative Jasmine Crockett. Take a look at this.
I do come prepared to committee, and then there's always somebody from this side that does something ridiculous that throws me all the way off. So, Jesus. Okay, so this is where we gonna start, Ms. Kaskin. First of all, let me apologize because that was uncalled for. So let me do what she would never do, which is to be an adult in this room or in this chamber. So let me start there. I'm also going to start with some nonsense that she was trying to spew. And unlike Ms. Boebert, I am legally trained. And I've passed a few bar exams, and I also legislated before I got here.
Ooh, throwing the qualifications out there. I like that. Look, I don't know who the Sally Katzen is, an NYU law professor. I don't know how much her house is. I don't know why it has to do anything with these government regulations or whatever. And I will simply say that while there are people who can attack someone's credibility or integrity or whatever based on the home that they own, the idea that Lauren Boebert should be doing that. Oh, Lauren Boebert, you don't respect people with high priced homes. You'd never associate with those sorts of people. You're not doing whatever you can to aspire to owning a $2.5 million home. By the way, she owned a restaurant. How expensive is her house right now? I'm guaranteeing it's not $100,000. She's desperate to hang out with people like Donald Trump, who own multiple estates. The faux populism is so ridiculous coming out of these people, and not even delivered well. But Viviana, what do you think?
Well, as a licensed realtor in the state of California, a $2.2 million home. I don't know where this woman lives, but it's not that crazy. It's not like she said $43 million, you know what I mean? Which is, that's a little extreme. 2.2, it's like a middle class home at this point. So it wasn't even that much of a diss, but you're right. It's that faux pop. You're like, oh, we're with the people. Get out of town, Lauren Boebert. She just lies all the time. It's just disgusting. And she's rude and she's a total mean girl. And I really hope that we're gonna see the end of these kinds of members in the chamber, but doesn't seem like that's far away. I don't even remember, but she did a great job. I'll say this about Lauren Boebert. I don't even remember what we were talking about. Now we're talking about this lady's house, and that's what she intended to do.
Yeah, perhaps. I think that this is the price that we pay for finally having people in these committee halls who care about what happens there, do their research, and care to like make something happen. You know, you get people like Katie Porter in there, or, you know, Ayanna Pressley, or, you know, AOC or whatever, as we're gonna see in a few minutes. And they make it something that's actually worth watching. They say interesting things. They don't simply accept what a lobbyist says. They point out people's financial conflicts of interest. And it looks good, but it also gets retweets. And so people who are just as desperate to be seen, but don't have the qualifications, aren't interested in doing the research, or not genuinely curious or intelligent people, are going to just mimic what they saw. You know, like an animal doing what their owner did. Like, but you don't understand the context, buddy. Like, calm down.
Yeah, what Katie Porter did wasn't an attack on that man. She was breaking down the cost of living in this country. And it wasn't saying, you know, shaming him for accumulating wealth in any sort. But you're right. That's right on the money, John. And it's disgusting, but it panders to their audience. They want to see a burn, and they're too slow and dimwitted to really know what a burn is.
Yeah. Well, and then that's the trouble too. They want it desperately, and they also know that they can fall flat on their face and their base will still like it. When Lauren Boebert did that thing about public urination in DC, it was, if that had happened to me, I would never go out in public again. I would be so embarrassed by what had happened. But for her base, she won that thing. She didn't know what she was talking about. She was 100% wrong. She didn't get her moment, not in a literal objective sense, but they still liked it. They still liked it. I will also say, $2.5 million cannot be a starter home. No, that's too much. That's way too much.
Not a starter home, but what, did she buy it in 1981 and it's worth $2.5 million? I mean, I don't know the details.
I don't even know that she has it. How would Lauren Boebert know how much her house costs? Let alone why would that matter? I don't know, whatever.
Maybe it's for sale. It's under foreclosure. She just put her on blast.
Yeah. That said, let's now turn to one of the people who I blame for Lauren Boebert and Marjorie Greene trying to have these moments. It's AOC, who does have good moments. Here's one.
Let's dive in. What we are seeing right now is Republicans trying to roll back a rule on the number of hours that pilots must require in order to train, in order to be licensed.
And I'm amused that the gentlelady is concerned about raising the age, the regulation that limits the age for pilots when there's a shortage of pilots, but they're okay with a president of the United States who's more than 20 years older than the minimum age.
Mr. Chairman, since you're referring to me, it's not age, it's training hour time. The number of hours that an individual is training, not the age.
Well, part of the regulation's the age as well. Chair recognizes Mr. Armstrong from North Dakota for 5.
I love that. Yeah, well, a different part that you're not admittedly talking about. says otherwise. I recognize you saved me. Somebody else talk.
Well, if you were to say that, then this would be a really good point. So there.
Exactly. If you, gentle lady, could you please say this other thing? I swear there's no trap. No, she wasn't talking about that, buddy. I know that like you're desperate to say that Joe Biden is old because he's very slightly older than the guy that you're going to spend the next couple of years defending, Donald Trump. Donald Trump ain't fresh out of college, man. Like, yes, Biden is old. That is definitely true. But Trump is just as far along. I'm assuming, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, just like I'm not a lawyer, just like Tom Fitton. I'm assuming heart health wise, Biden's probably winning that battle. But Viviana, what do you think?
I mean, it's a stretch. It's a stretch there, I think, you know. But what are you gonna do? We have an older person in office. It goes back to these party lines. I really, you know, my personal view, I don't think Biden should be running, not due to his age. There's other reasons as well, because I would happily vote for someone his age that was maybe doing a little bit more for the country.
Yes.
But you know, we have ageism is the ism in this country that is worse than all others. It's worse than racism, it's worse than sexism. And we don't feel it as much because we're still young. But as my parents get older, I start to see it. And it's something that we see in politics now all the time. And we cannot be calling people out like that. It's just not right and it's not respectful. But
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
there's a lot of reasons to not like Biden. His age, probably the last on the list, frankly.
Perhaps, yeah. Yeah, and we would support someone just as old if they were doing more. I would have supported Bernie, who is in fact older.
If Bernie was running, I would have a Bernie sticker right here. And I wouldn't 100%. Care.
Just permanent.
I want to end with
AOC tweeted about that little interaction saying, what's unique about hearings is that it's just you, a witness, and five unfiltered minutes. You either sink or swim on your own effort. Fox News and tech billionaires can't save you here. If you're not on point, there's nowhere to hide. And that's where I wait. See, I like that. See, but that exact same message in theory, slightly changed, is something that you would see a person like a Lauren Boebert tweet out. But it wouldn't have been based on having been right in this situation. Like it's that actually matters. It's not just about you agreeing with me. AOC was right in the interaction and that should matter.
It's because AOC is actively listening. She's done her research before she gets in there. Now they do the research before they get in there, but they come up with their arguments before they step into the chamber. And so then they want to use that argument that they prepared that has no validity in this discussion. So that's just someone who's not good at debate. Sorry, go back to debate 101.
100%. Okay, you know what? I think we're going to take a slightly early second break, but when we come back, Greg Abbott has another stunt, another Republican using migrants as if they were playing pieces in a board game. We'll have that for you after this. Okay, we got some important stuff to jump into here, and the hour is racing by, so why don't we jump into this. Republicans have been incredibly critical of Joe Biden's effort to absolve students of some of their debt. They've done everything they can to stop it. If you have $10,000 to $20,000 in debt, they want to make sure that you still have $10,000 to $20,000 in debt, but they don't want you to believe that they're not going to address the problem or at least talk about something that's tangentially related to the problem, because now they've got their plan. Okay? Forget Joe Biden's thing. Forget Bernie Sanders and his free college. They've got a plan. Senator Bill Cassidy introduced legislation alongside Chuck Grassley, who definitely understands the travails of the young. John Cornyn, Tommy Tuberville, and Tim Scott. Here is them introducing their plan.
President Biden's scheme does nothing to drive the underlying cause of the debt crisis. According to the Center for Responsible Federal Budget, if this student debt loan transfer goes into effect, students and taxpayers will be back in the same situation in 5 years. Total debt at that point will be $1.6 trillion. This is not a fix. This is merely a Band-Aid, and the Band-Aid saddles taxpayers with a burden again in 5 years. That's why this morning we introduced the Lowering Education Cost and Debt Act, a package of five bills aimed at directly addressing the issues driving skyrocketing cost of higher education and the increasing amounts of debt students take on to attend school.
So that is that's an interesting theory. So Biden has this thing that would immediately lift a massive financial debt from the backs of millions of people. And they say that's not a fundamental solution, that's just a Band-Aid. So let's take a look at what they have, okay? And as you see these, what you will come to understand is they're not gonna do the Band-Aid and the solution. They're gonna ignore the Band-Aid altogether. So here's their bills. There's the College Transparency Act. It would reform college data reporting systems to make information about outcomes such as graduation rates and debt after graduation more accessible, so that you would have a little bit more information before choosing which college to go to. And then when you choose and you go to that college, you would begin accruing debt again, because you'll notice that that has nothing to do with your debt. Okay, but maybe in Bill 2 they have something. So the Understanding the True Cost of College Act, it would require colleges and universities to use uniform financial aid letters that are clear on the cost associated with attending the college. I actually think that that's another good idea. So you would get a standardized form that tells you exactly how much debt you're being burdened with, and it will be a lot, because that does nothing to actually reduce the cost of college, you'll notice. But maybe it's in Bill 3, you know? Third time's the charm, they say. The Informed Student Borrowing Act, that would require prospective students to be provided with additional information about their loans, including the duration of the loan, their expected monthly payment, and how much money they're likely to make after attending their school and program of choice. I don't know how you would generate that last bit, that seems impossible. But having more information about the terms of your loan, what the payments would be, is good. You should have that. And you'll need it, because you'll notice that that also has nothing to do with lowering the cost of college. You'll just have more information about all the debt that you will have as you have it. But you know what, they still have Bill 4, so maybe they left it for last. The Streamlining Accountability and Value in Education for Students Act. It's a long one, so maybe it's the best, I don't know. It reduces the 9 different student loan repayment options offered by the Department of Education to just 2. The standard 10-year repayment plan and the Repay program, which allows low-income borrowers with low balances on their loans to receive forgiveness sooner. That last bit, maybe for some people, would actually result in forgiveness. But that better be a massive ramping up of that program, because we've talked about that program before, and it has almost canceled no debt. Over well over a decade, it has almost delivered nothing for anyone. For everyone else, this would do nothing. It would in fact lower the number of options you have for how you pay back the debt that you'll still have, because none of these four bills reduce the cost of college. So isn't that amazing? They tell you, that guy that says he's gonna save you $10,000 to $20,000, that's just a Band-Aid, man. You want something more fundamental, like standardized forms and PDFs you can search, and that's it. That's all we have. It's amazing, Viviana. It's ballsy, I'll say that.
Well, if I read that, or if I understood that last one, you had to pretty much pay it off, and then we'll forgive the last $15 or something. I don't know how much you need to pay off already.
There is a program where if you have very low income, and if you maintain all of your payments without missing a single one on a very low income for a certain number of years, and you pay and you pay and you pay and you pay, eventually it will be forgiven. That's the program. It almost never forgives the actual loans. They're saying we would lower the timeline. That doesn't mean that it'll actually work, but it means that you'll find out sooner that it's not gonna work.
What's really telling about these bills, and I agree with you, there's some really good stuff in here, right? And so what's really telling about that good stuff, about that informing students, is that that's why we have such crippling debt for students now, because there was predatory lending practices on 18-year-olds and their families that put them into massive amounts of debt because they did not inform the students. In fact, they misinformed the students when they were eligible for Pell Grants and all kinds of free money from the government, subsidies, things like that, and they didn't tell them. They didn't educate them. And so all of these kids, and now who are adults and working and have $30, $40, $50, $100,000 worth of debt, were preyed upon, because they wanted to be productive Americans. They wanted to go out there and get an education and get a career, and they preyed on those students and they preyed on their families. And now they're saying, yeah, we did do it. And here's Bill 1, 2, 3, 4. We're not gonna do that anymore. You still gotta pay, but here's a couple pamphlets so that we don't look so bad. because they were disgusting. And we should forgive the debt, and we should start a whole new system. I agree with Bernie, of course, free college for all. That's gonna really help us move forward in this automation that we're going through as well. So anyway, I think it's just very telling. It's not bad to educate people, but the fact that the GOP is like, hey, guess what, everyone? Now we're gonna inform you instead of screwing you.
Yeah. Yeah, I would let most of this stuff go through. But any of you who are waiting to find out if you're gonna get your student debt to be canceled, would you trade the debt cancellation that they're trying to block for what I just read for you? Would you trade that? I kind of doubt it. You know, it's weird because when I saw the video and I saw those guys, I did think that they'd probably have something good. You know, each of them collectively probably went to college at a point when you could pay your tuition with like a sack of turnips or something. And so I thought that they would probably understand modern day students' issues. But anyway, also I will end on this. It's not even like you take Biden's thing, which is the Band-Aid, and then you take their thing, which is like the forward facing fundamental fix. It's not, it still doesn't do anything to lower the cost. Like there's some stuff that in theory could, with more disclosure, they'll be shamed into lowering the cost. I mean, if you believe that, but it doesn't require the cost to be lowered. It doesn't actually regulate because they don't want to. They like the people who are making money off of how expensive colleges.
They were making money too, John. They were making, yeah, I bet you those 100%. Same people involved in writing these bills were involved in taking advantage of students.
100%. And you mentioned Bernie Sanders. I will just say we don't have time to dive into it, unfortunately. But Bernie Sanders and Pramila Jayapal just reintroduced this week the College for All Act of 2023. To make higher education free at public schools for most Americans, they would pay for it by taxing Wall Street. It is an actual solution to the issue that, of course, they will never allow because they don't want Wall Street to be taxed. That's it. They can call themselves populists as much as they want. They can say the word elites as much as they want. They're there to defend elite interests, and that's what they're doing.
100%.
Okay, with that said, let's move to our last story for this first hour. Red state governors are competing with each other to see who can be most cruel and callous with the life of undocumented migrants. This week's winner is Greg Abbott, who announced that he had just dropped off the first bus, implying that there will be others of migrants in LA. So basically, he loaded a bunch of human beings up onto a bus. He carted them, I don't know, 1,000, 1,500 miles away and dropped them off somewhere. And that's pretty much it. And he says, LA is a city migrants seek to go to, particularly now its leaders approved its self-declared sanctuary status. So LA's cool. They said that they don't despise migrants. So whatever, just go there, we don't care. And this apparently is true. This did actually happen. Karen Bass, mayor of LA, said in a statement that more than 40 people, and I'm glad that that word is in there to remind everyone that they're people. She says they were dropped off. She says it's abhorrent that an American elected official is using human beings as pawns in his cheap political games. Texas says now they've sent 21,600 migrants to sanctuary cities all across the country. They probably don't know the exact number, and I understand why they don't believe that these are people. They're not worth actually tracking. They just dropped them at Union Station. That's it. A human rights organization thankfully came and helped these human beings, brought them to a church. You know, a church, it's a place where like people supposedly have political values. In this case, they did. In the case of Abbott, they just pretend that they do, but then they treat them like garbage. Can you imagine if Jesus had seen the loading up of this bus? Anyway, Viviana, what do you think?
There were children on that bus too, John.
Yeah.
There were children on that bus. I think it's Operation Wetback 2023. This is something that the United States has done for a long, long time. And it's a real political, tactic to try to drum up, sort of favor with your party. Karen Bass said it perfectly. It's just using these people as a political pawn. Just to inform, Union Station here in Los Angeles is a train hub and a bus hub. It's not a safe place for children and kids to families to just be dropped off and not have a plan. It's actually quite despicable and disgusting. But like I said, the United States has a long-standing history of carting immigrants left and right, and citizens, mind you. Operation Wetback actually took anybody who looked to be Mexican and shipped them to put them on a train and put them in Mexico. Abbott wishes he could do that, but the Constitution doesn't let him do that. So now he's got to put him somewhere else. And so that's what he's doing. And it's sick, it's abhorrent, it's horrible, and we're going to keep seeing it. And hopefully there are many sanctuary cities like Los Angeles, I'm proud to reside in, that we don't treat people like that. We try to have some sort of plan to, treat people humanely.
100%. Yeah, treat them like actual people. Treat them like, you know, when we were reading those religious texts growing up, one or two words remained, like actually had an effect on us. Anyway, Governor Abbott needs Jesus. That's what I'll end with. That's all the time we have for the first hour of the show, but there is more to come in the aftermath, everybody. So thank you. We will see you in just a few.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.